My name is Jerry, and this is the Wild Eye Podcast. Campfire Conversations, Namibia Unpacked. Hey, everybody. In this episode, Andrew speaks to two of his guests that joined him for his recent Namibian adventure. They discuss the extreme experiences, incredible wildlife encounters, and many of the contrasts that their two-week journey through Africa's most remote regions gave them. It's an awesome conversation about what it means to be completely disconnected and to experience the wild in its true and most raw form. Recorded around a campfire under stars. So grab a cup of coffee, imagine you're sitting with them, and I'm sure you guys are going to enjoy this one.
Let's kick things off with, where are we now? So if we had to try and describe to someone, like, just the setting. Obviously, we're in Namibia.
Huddled around a fire.
How cold is it on a scale of 1 to 10, Ellie?
-2. Always had worse, and we'll get to that.
We have. Nicholas, describe where we are right now.
So we're in the middle of nowhere. We have a fantastic sky. We have the Milky Way. We've got a tented camp and the pleasure to be all together in the middle of nowhere.
And we've just enjoyed one of the best Malva puddings on the face of this earth, cooked on a fire.
That's true.
So
insane.
We've come to the end of a 2-week journey through Namibia now. I want you guys to try and think all the way back to Sassa's Vlei. Where we kind of started, apart from our first night in Windhoek.
What about the arrival in the airport?
Oh, with the King of Squats. Should we just ask people to go and Google King of Squats?
Yes.
It's a real thing.
Google image.
Google image.
He is a real person.
So we passed the King of Squats, made it through with Namibia's new visa laws and everything. That was all pretty plain sailing. Just keep your paperwork for later.
To burn on the fire.
Yes. Submitted.
Yes.
Anyway, so back to Sassa's Vlei, which was the first of three chapters, three very different chapters, and we will expand on that. But Christy, you'd been to Sassa's Vlei before, so let's hear Nicholas, Ailey, first time to Sassa's Vlei. What did you guys think, and what were you expecting versus what you got?
I think the vastness of it, I wasn't expecting it to be such a vast area. And you don't get a sense of it until you're really up in a helicopter looking down. And overriding memory, unfortunately, is cold.
So we had a cold front that came through on, what was it, the second or third day that we were there?
I think it was the
second day.
But also the colours, those oranges in the sand, just incredible, absolutely incredible.
For you, Nicholas?
Yeah, I was not expecting such a vast portion of desert, and the colours of the sand was amazing. And the helicopter was something unreal. We have two sessions. The first one, we had the pleasure to have a lot of animals. And on the second way, on the second trip, we've got quite a lot of wind.
So we had those east winds blowing in, which kicked up a lot of dust.
Yeah, yeah. And it was something really impressive.
Seeing the sand, just the movement across the dunes. Yeah, incredible. Yeah.
Christy, for you, having returned and having been there before?
Yeah, the vastness still took me by surprise. And I think the colors for me, you know, you look in one direction, same time of day, it's these vibrant oranges and the shadows and the lights, and you can turn the other direction, it's pastels, purples, pinks. So those are pretty dramatic.
And having been there before, the kind of images that you got this time around, did you go in with a different mindset and did you come away with something different?
I did. Yeah, I went in wanting to play around with different focal lengths and things like that, but I hadn't done the aerial perspective. And so that took it to a whole new level to get that perspective, and not just with images, but to kind of hit home on just how crazy vast the place is and just how small of a piece you're actually seeing, even though we covered so much ground each day with the dunes and Dead Vlei.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the light in the morning. with the sunrise was something.
Yeah. The glow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, you know, so fortunate that the clouds also playing around with the shadows, you know.
That first morning.
On the first morning.
So we did three nights at Sosses Flay, Dead Flay area. And that gave us the afternoon, our very first afternoon we went in and just set the scene. So it is a kilometer or so walk from the parking area. So it's good to, you know, I wanted you guys to wrap your heads around that and then be very clear with what we went in for the next morning. The afternoon we worked the main road, and then we did another morning in Sosses Flay, in Dead Flay itself, and then an afternoon of helicopter flights and morning. And again, we got diversity and contrast there. That's a bit of a theme that we'll unpack. Three nights, just right, too long, too short. And what would you recommend for someone visiting or thinking of visiting Sosses Flay and Dead Flay?
Three nights was good because the first day we just arrived, and as you say, we just spent an hour on the site just to see how it's going to be.
And we got some great images from that afternoon as well. Completely different light to the morning. So would you say that it's important to go and do at least one afternoon and one morning in Dead Flay?
At least.
Yeah. I think you need to orientate yourself to the area first, because it is so unlike anywhere else. Do a recce.
Yes, do. Yeah, and have the opportunity to visit the places, the certain dunes, Dead Flay at different times of day to get those contrasts with the shadows and light, and just to kind of get the creative juices flowing. I think stopping in that first afternoon, you kind of get a feel for it, know what to expect. But then the next morning, you're kind of blown away with, you know, what the sunrise is doing and the kind of light. Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how would you recommend, how strongly would you recommend people stretch and do a scenic helicopter flight?
100%.
100.
As somebody has a fear of helicopters, I would still say you need to do it. It just adds so much to the experience. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, three nights without the helicopter could be a little bit too long. But the helicopter cuts the...
Just is something different and a different perspective. But I will say also the location of accommodation, I think, is
important,
very important there, because we were lucky to get into Dead Flay that little bit earlier to set up and without the crowds, because they do come in.
The crowds and the Instagrammers and the influencers and the... Yes. All right, moving swiftly along.
They have no social etiquette.
Yeah, so it does get quite busy. I think for the most part, a lot of people go and climb the dunes for the sunrise. Whilst us as photographers, we want to get in. But so we had an amazing time there. And those scenic helicopter flights were just incredible. So from there, we flew north. And really, we started to leave behind the civilization and the kind of the places, number one, Christy, that you'd ever visited on your previous trip. But for most people, we went into areas that they had not uncovered. So the private Palmbach concession, a private area there, we went to Desert Rhino Camp, where again, we had three nights. What was your guys' experience at Desert Rhino Camp? I want to share a little bit of something, but landing there, coming from Sosses Flay down in the south, first of all, flying all of that way and seeing the transformation of the landscape.
Yeah.
First impressions once you landed at Desert Rhino?
Grass. How the hell do they find these rhinos?
Needle/haystack, yes. You know?
Yeah. It's, the trackers are amazing and the programs that they're doing there to be able to locate them. But yeah, back to the theme of vastness is next level.
Did you think we would see a rhino when you landed there and looked around?
No. I was hoping for maybe one, a glimpse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe far in the distance.
Nicholas?
It has been something unusual for me. First of all, it was not a desert.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say, because every time I've been there, I've spoken about this Martian landscape, not a blade of grass, just rock. And it was completely transformed into like a glade. It was just beautiful grasses. So, yeah.
Not beautiful colors.
Colors.
Musman for the grasses as well.
Yeah.
What was making the grasses move, Ailey?
A bit of wind. And not from any of us.
Gale force winds. I mean, that was... So we had the east wind pick up that we were there. It gave us some interesting windswept hairdos, and there was maybe some serum needed in the evenings for
skin
hydration in the skin area. But what it did do, the strong winds allowed us, because for people that are listening and are not familiar with this, we go out with the Save the Rhino Trust trackers, and we actively track these rhinos so that they can do their data collection. And that strong wind, when we found a rhino eventually, and we did this pretty quickly, I think on both days, we were able to approach, and the strong wind meant that we were
quite close.
We were able to get quite close without disturbing the animal. Talk me through that first encounter with that black rhino that we found on our first day.
So the trackers found the rhino. We joined them, and we were able to approach by foot. And I think it was something like 50 meters. Very calm, very peaceful. The wind against him, so no problem.
He couldn't hear a thing, yeah. And smell a thing.
And we spent a long time, really long time, playing with him. And it has been quite interesting sighting.
But I think what Bond said, Bond's being the local guide, that, you know, imagining it being a football pitch and trying to find four ants, the likelihood of finding an animal there, just the odds seemed so against it. And then we found it. Mm-hmm. And then we're able to walk so close and just watch. It was quite incredible.
That was a great analogy.
Yeah, and I loved the enthusiasm of the trackers and Bond, our local guide, because... Yeah. You know, it's obviously special for us. We signed up for this and we got to see it on several occasions, but they were equal, if not more excited than we were to see these animals and ones they hadn't seen in quite some time. Yeah. That was really special.
So Bonce's analogy for everyone, if take a football field, in the center of the field, you pop down four ants, and then the penalty spots on either side of the field would be the water points. And the animals move across that landscape, and now that's what we're going to be trying to find. And so they start off at the springs and the water points and trying to pick up on fresh track and sign. Obviously, there's been so much rain in Namibia, and I think that goes back to the state of the region that we saw there. There's so much more grass after these good rains. I was personally a little worried about what implications that might have on our ability to find things. But it was just incredible, beautiful. And photographically, what it did do, and we can talk about finding Troy, an individual rhino who these guys hadn't seen for
5 years, maybe. Presumed dead, according to the way they do the tracking and with sightings, I think, yeah.
And so we had an incredible encounter with him where it was a backlit scene. We had the contrast of the rhino, but the grasses really made it. And yeah. Contrast, again, a theme that has popped up on this trip a couple of times. So in total, we saw three different rhinos. Troy was a chance encounter, and he made us work, but boy, did he give us some incredible opportunities. And so... Desert Rhino Camp has gone through, apart from the grass being completely new and something I hadn't experienced before, Desert Rhino Camp itself has gone through a bit of a makeover. Talk us about through the rooms.
Lovely.
Incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, star beds to start your morning, afternoon, evening, outdoor showers.
Just everything. Just comfort. Nice. You could make your own coffee in the morning to sit outside, read your book.
Mm-hmm.
Just, yeah.
Protection from the wind that we were talking about earlier, whether it was in the room or in the main area with the pull down shades, but everything does kind of blend into the land, and you know, it makes
it suited
like,
the environment completely.
And great staff in the form of Vater, our waiter. He was sparkling personality, sparkling water. What a gentleman. Little did we know his family member would be hosting us and our chef on this last portion of the trip. And wow, he's outplayed himself, but let's keep that for now. But
just to come back to the lodge.
Yeah.
The beauty when they renovated, they used the old cam for the staff.
I love
it. Yes.
And that was something really great for them. And they were so happy, you know, to be able to have the access to this lodge for them.
And I think that speaks to the way that wilderness do things is, you know, they always want to make sure that nothing goes to waste. And yeah, I think a significant upgrade for the staff as well. My favorite feature of that room, though, was that, like, it's a star bed. So if you can picture going out to your outside shower, there's three or four steps up on a little bit of a raised platform with a nice soft cushion,
mattress.
A mattress.
It was a mattress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some cushions. And on our final evening,
and also a wall around. So if it's windy, you've got shelter, but also shade for the sun. Yeah.
So on the last evening, a couple of bottles of Amarula and just an encouragement to go and sit out there and stare at the stars. Yeah. So in some of the camps, it's in Namibia, it's quite popular that you can have your bed on wheels and you can push it out to sleep under the stars. You know, that's like a bit of a commitment and you never know how cold it's going to get. I love that you could just pop up there in the morning with a coffee or in the evening with those Amarulas. Really, really good.
I was going to take my duvet out, but it was a bit chilly.
And I think, you know, it would be a miss. Chief Bontz, our guide there, who's been there for the better part of 13 years.
A kid at heart.
A kid at heart.
But so
and a workhorse.
And a workhorse, yeah. I think part of our windburn was his driving. And I say that in a good way.
He got us to where we needed to be. But it's, you know, it's, and I think we can say the same for these guys here. When people have been in the industry for a long time, sometimes it becomes monotonous. And, you know, that's a harsh environment. We did our first day, I think we did about 120Ks.
Yeah.
Now, like that is an extensive drive. Those roads are rough.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. The vehicles are purpose-built for that, and they're amazing in that respect. But for Bontz to be doing that every day, day in, day out, like we were there for three nights, we left. He probably got new guests that afternoon, and he was as enthusiastic with those guys as he was with us.
Yeah,
He was a request because I'd had the joy of being hosted by him in the past, but such an incredible person and passionate about what he does.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that evening when the trackers, the Save the Rhino trackers, came and spoke to us about all the rhinos and how, you know, Bontz was also part of that conversation, the passion about the animals, but the way it's set up to be able to go to that lovely map to see where we had gone round to actually understand the landscape. But just, they've done it all so well. Yeah.
There was also, Christy, a theme around community and ownership and employment and engagement. And that really came through at Desert Rhino.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I think they all had their favorite rhino, whether they were still alive or not. And they could describe their personality and pretty much their entire, you know, life cycle that they got to spend with them. And it came across so genuine. And yeah, they really take that ownership and passion to a next level. You can tell they really care about what they do.
But also, you know, what we've discovered later on with our chef here, you know, he admitted he was maybe in with the wrong crowd, you know, growing up, and how wilderness took him in, gave him a trade. You know, he's from the area, local area. And, you know, how that's given him a life and he's, you know, can move forward. And I think everybody in Desert Rhino was from the local communities. They were employed in that lodge and, you know, shared some of their life experiences. You know, their personality, their culture was within the lodge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's a big focus on those community conservancies and ownership in Namibia as a whole, and Bontz did a great job of putting that, because, you know, when you asked him where you're from and he kind of stepped aside from the vehicle and pointed, you see that mountain over there, just behind there, which was, yeah. So that was chapter two, completely different, but very complementary to what we'd had in Sauces Flay. Then chapter three, so a slight change in our plan. We were going to kind of overland through the Palombach concession, set up camp at Hunkab, waterhole or spring for a night, and then continue our drive north into the Honab River Valley. But logistically, we opted to take the main road. We went via Cecil, and we say main road, but this is a gravel road. It's just a better gravel road, and actually a really good gravel road. So I think that's something that people need to understand is the roads in Namibia are good, and that's why it's so popular for self-drives. You, Christy, when you were here last, you guys, Mike hosted you on a private, and you guys drove everywhere. But we went through Sesfontein, stopped off, had a lovely coffee, looked at the map and where we were plotting to go, popped into a Himba village on the way in here, and really just like off the beaten track. And we literally turned into a riverbed and drove along and then popped into this village. That was quite a nice experience.
It was really quite a good experience, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they were so welcoming and willing to indulge our photography and interest. Yeah, that was really neat.
Yeah, a little bit of an unexpected addition and a nice bonus. For me personally, it was the first time to meet and engage with Himba people. Mm-hmm. And then we continued along for quite an extensive drive. I mean, it was comfortable.
But the changing scenery, it just every sort of, I don't know, so far, the scenery just change. Whether it was plants, whether it was hills, just trees, it just changed.
It was a transit day, but it was really nice to see all this different atmosphere. And it haven't been so long. No. You were pushing us to say it's going to be a long drive and so. And finally, when we arrive here, say, already.
Yeah.
It felt like an easy day, I will say.
I mean, just to put that into perspective, we left camp at 7:30, Desert Rhino Camp. And we pulled in here about 6:30 that afternoon, all right? When we dropped into that Honab River proper, like, and started to make our way west towards the Skeleton Coast National Park and this Wilderness Safaris concession here, what did that feel like? Because that was also quite an abrupt change, wasn't it? Coming through all those mountains and valleys and the open grassland plains, and then all of a sudden you've got these beautiful Anna trees and this big river system.
Vast river. Just, you can't comprehend the size of that river. You know, from bank to bank, it's just unbelievable. It's a river. And the fact that it's flooded so recently, just, yeah.
I think one day we need to come back and to see the water in the East Zimbabwe.
That would be quite something. Yes. It really would.
Yeah. It must be a good experience.
Yeah. And so this place, you know, we've now spent 7 nights in total here. And 7 nights in one location is, in most places, it's a stretch. You know, places like Malamala, the Mara, Serengeti, you can do 7 nights in those kind of ecosystems. Here we are in the northwestern corner of Namibia in a desert landscape. 7 nights in, our last night here tonight. Run me through the last week, Christy.
It doesn't feel like enough. And I will say we saw so much every time we went out, but the pace of the 7 days has felt so peaceful and so calm, even though we were seeing so much and photographing so many unique different things. And so somehow this place can strike that balance of both, which I think is so special. Because like you said, you can go on some safaris that are action-packed and, you know, it's kind of go, go, go every drive. And this, again, we were seeing so much, but I never felt sort of this fast pace, if you will.
We've had full-on days and just...
And sure, we started early every day. Yeah. It's as if we'd been lying in.
Well, that's what I was going to also just paint the picture here, because obviously there's Honab Skeleton Coast Camp, which is a couple of kilometers to our east at the moment. We are not there, though.
Nope.
We have a little 3x3 meter dome tent with a stretcher. And we have our local expeditions guide in Foster, who we'll chat a bit about now, and 3 guys who have been looking after us here in the middle of nowhere for the last week. And so we don't have a tent or like for a main area because there's no chance of rain, which means we don't have shade, which means that lunch has been in some of the most amazing places. Where have we had lunch, Nicholas? Well, which one was your favorite? Shall we start with that?
The ocean.
The ocean? Okay, yeah. So we've enjoyed lunch at the ocean. Where else?
Riverbed, meaning 5 feet from the ocean.
But
So the, we've had it in the riverbed,
yeah.
Next to this this rock just around from camp in the lee, in the shade of a rock in the middle of the day, the ocean. Where else? Those were the three main spots. Am I forgetting something?
Well, the research station, simply because of the wind, which was also very neat.
At Movabai, which is on the Skeleton Coast, where we went twice. We opted to drop there and back twice, and we'll expand on that shortly. But I, following lunches, and I think this is part of what the full days were, but we just kicked back.
Yeah. And I think not having that separation between being out and then going back to a more traditional lodge that most of us are maybe used to. You're always one with, you know, the environment. You just feel maybe a deeper connection to the environment and the animals, because you're never really retreating into a traditional lodge that where, you know, inevitably the Wi-Fi comes on or there's other tourists and four walls around you. So yeah, there's the connection is so much deeper.
So our typical day here has been getting up 6:30, coffee, breakfast, leave by 7:15, stop for a coffee, and then link up with our support crew for a lunch and at around about 1 to 2, and then literally siesta on our chairs in the middle of wherever until about 3, 4, and then we continue again because there is no reason to come back to camp. So it's been great. People have read books, people have listened to music, people have slept underneath rocks, people have climbed trees. What else have people done?
Lost at Uno.
Lost at Uno. We've played a bit of Uno, some card games. Won at Uno. But it,
and also chatted.
Chatted. So no Wi-Fi connectivity, signal, anything out here. How's that been?
Incredible.
Yeah.
And also in the park, we don't see any cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when you're on a site, you've got the elephants for you, you've got the rhino for you, you've got the lions for you.
Yeah.
And compared to what we have seen in the Mara, in the Kruger, you know, you can spend hours on a site waiting for something happen and nobody.
It is very different. And, you know, this was the first bit that we've actually mentioned the sightings that we've had here. You've mentioned the desert adapted elephants. Okay. This trip has been pretty spectacular. Our first afternoon driving into camp, we saw the desert adapted elephants in the Honab River. And then what did we see, Nicholas?
In the morning?
15, 20 minutes from camp?
15, 20 minutes
that
from
afternoon?
Camp. In the afternoon, but especially in the morning.
I don't think we saw him. We saw the dead giraffe.
We haven't seen him. We have just seen...
Who's him?
Kill.
What's him?
Obi.
What is Obi?
Obi.
It's a lion.
It's a lion king.
So
a beautiful, beautiful desert-adapted lion.
So the only male... in this area, and on the first afternoon we got here, we found that he had made a giraffe kill 15 minutes.
We smelt it first.
It was ripe.
Yeah.
And we did. It got progressively more ripe over the following 5 days that we watched. But just going back to the sightings, we were fortunate that we spent some time with this male lion on a giraffe kill, like literally 15, 20 minutes from camp. I think. For 90% of the time that we were there over these 5 days photographing him, we were the only vehicle there.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which is just mind-boggling. And then, you know, one of the things that we do when we're out here, even when you're at Honab Skeleton Coast Camp, is a day trip out to the west. It's about a 60-kilometer drive onto the Atlantic Ocean, onto the Skeleton Coast to an area called Movabai. Seal colonies, just an incredible drive in itself, you know, going through the river, the floodplain, these mountains, the dune belt, and then onto these coastal plains. Our first day out there, we picked up on an area where another group of lions had been hunting seals. And as luck would have it, we decided to make a plan to go back on a second day.
much earlier.
Starting at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Starting at 5 o'clock, which is actually, you know, it's like a summer safari start.
Yeah.
But it's a 3-hour drive. It's quite a drive to get there. Let's be honest. It was so worth it because we were able to see a second lion in this environment, but with a seal kill.
On the beach.
On the beach.
On the beach.
She waved in that.
Jenby Pine.
Just crashing.
And about how many jackal in the background when we first got there?
17.
17, 20.
All of them. They were all there.
On another dead seal.
On another, yeah.
Yeah.
So these lions down on the coastal plains, they have been regularly targeting the seal colony, the edge of the seal colony. There's a female there with two cubs, which we didn't see at the moment or this time, but this female just on our second outing out there just gave us some incredible photographic opportunities. And again, time. Yeah. We just sat.
All day.
All day.
I mean, we had lunch. I don't know. Then we went back.
It was just 8 to 4.
And she was just so relaxed, calm.
Yeah. You really felt like you were spending the day with her.
Yeah.
And you kind of felt in tune with her a little bit because of that.
Would you say that that's a theme for this last part of the trip is
for sure
being in tune and connected with nature? I mean, today we sat on the edge of the riverbank with elephants feeding below us and passing by underneath us, just sitting quietly. Yeah.
And today when, you know, that elephant, the bull elephant just stopped. Turned and just stared at us all, and you just like, you, yeah.
And I think because wonderful of how fragile this place is and all of the challenges the wildlife is facing, every encounter with the animal, you just feel so privileged that you're seeing that, because you know, who knows what tomorrow holds for them.
I think, you know, after what we found out with the cheetah in the region, you know, with Charlie the other lioness, you know, although they've welcomed the floods in and it's been so wonderful, it's had a huge impact on the wildlife here.
They're under pressure.
And you really begin to understand it staying here and seeing the landscape and
I think it would be amiss of us to talk and be in this region, you know, so close to a very tragic incident that took place, which led to the loss of a human life as well as the loss of a lion's life. And, you know, I think We've seen how that has impacted people in this landscape, and it's a tragedy all around. But it does highlight the challenges in this region, and it just makes it even more of a privilege what we've been able to see and experience, and the way that we've been able to see and experience it by camping where we are at the moment. And
it has been a unique trip, sincerely. And this last period here, it's going to be the last one, because Wilderness will stop
these trips,
this type of trips, and we'll do something completely different.
So, yeah, I mean, we booked this many years ago. Did you guys book this? Just 2 years ago. Yeah. So we may well be the last of this kind of setup that they're doing. It does sound as though they're going to be exploring other options, but I don't think it's going to be as basic as this.
No.
And so, I mean, in any itinerary that we craft at Wilder, we always try and build up to the more premier accommodations and lodging and that sort of stuff, you know, so that people are building up to this crescendo. We went the other way around and literally went from this fabulous desert rhino camp where you could make your coffee with a star bed and it was just amazing, to something completely different, but where experience very much is the luxury.
Yeah.
I mean, we sat here photographing star trails last night and the night before. We didn't need to drive anywhere. We didn't need to do anything because we are literally in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if we, 2 weeks in, and we've thrown some jokes around this, around, you know, just try and whittle down to 10 images, which we're still negotiating on what that number is.
I said 10 images per day.
But we did kind of go through and start to then assign, you know, just genres to it. So like an image from Dead Flay, 2 images from the helicopter Fancy flights, 2 rhino images or 1 image from the rhinos, I think, because there was so much else that was on the go here with the desert elephants and the lions. And
but the rhinos were somewhere else. We did allow 2 rhinos.
Did we?
Okay. Yes. Yeah. But now we've got so many elephants.
But even if we did that, Do you think that anyone would be submitting the same image?
No. And no one would believe it. It was a 2-week trip, maybe a 2-year journey.
You passed a comment on that. Like, just even what we see and we drive through in a day here,
right, yeah,
feels like it's a trip in its own because of the diversity.
Yeah.
So one word that would describe this trip, Nicholas.
Diversity.
Amy.
I would say extremes.
Expand on that one quickly.
Extremes of landscape or
temperature.
temperature. Food.
Accommodation.
But just everything is just extreme. You know, whether, you know, like the animals here living on the extreme, you know, and as I say, the landscape, just everything has been extremes.
Mm. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Christy?
I know we've thrown this word around a lot, but I think I have to go with contrast. Just how much contrast you see, contrast at individual sightings with the lighting, the environment the animals are in.
Mm. The colors.
Colors.
And obviously with the lodging too.
And the accommodations, yeah. Now, it's, I don't say it lightly, but I could not have asked for more on this trip. It's been such a privilege to share it with you guys. It's, I think, these, particularly this last week,
yeah,
where there's been a deeper level of connection in many ways. It's just been so good. Yeah. The photographs are almost a secondary to, like, accompany the experience and just add depth to all of that.
But there have been lots of times when it's just felt very, very natural to put down the camera and just
enjoy,
because it's so unique, so different. And I think all of us have just gone, I just want to take this in with my own eyes and experience it, see it, smell it, you know, whatever. But
yeah,
I think we've all done that voluntarily without, you know, just instinctively.
Right. So as we bring this into land, for anyone who's been toying with the idea of visiting Namibia, not sure whether they should do it, you know, what would you say? And I know we've only seen 3 portions of a massive and extensive country, but what would you say to them?
Do it.
But on a long term. Don't spend just a week. Have time for you. It's so, and we, as you say, we have just seen part of Namibia.
Yeah.
It's something very special.
I think, you know, the fact that we have all said it feels so much longer than 2 weeks because everything we've seen, but especially the 7 days here, just, yeah. You know, as we were saying today, it just feels like we're coming home, you know.
Yeah.
Because it feels so settled and relaxed here. We know the routine, and it's actually quite terrifying tomorrow.
It's kind of back to Vintville. But now also to put that into context, like, this entire country, I think, has, what, 3.2 million people?
Yes.
And you guys are all going home to your respective nations. Well, some of you are carrying on a little bit longer. But, yeah, it is going to be a shock to the system, mm-hmm, to come out of this into something. But I think that's also a really poignant reminder of how special it has been to disconnect.
Yeah.
To experience what we have, to see what we have. And I look forward to seeing some of your guys' images, mm-hmm, from the trip.
For sure.
Yeah. 10, Nicholas.
10 per day.
10 per day. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
If you have any questions for Andrew, as always, drop him an email, andrew@wildeye.com. That's WILD with a dash EYE.com. Or go and find him on Instagram and all the social media platforms at Andrew Beck SA. That's Andrew BECKSA. And hit him up if you have any further questions. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for lending us your ears. We'll chat to you in the next episode. My name is Jerry. I'm from Wild Eye. Bye for now.